You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Well, welcome in, MLB.com Extras. This is the National League Central Edition. So much to cover, including the Cubs, maybe mastering the mental side of the game. Reds, if they're going to get back in it, need to figure out how to play on the road. The Pirates, we introduced some ideas that maybe they'll be an offensive club in the second half. Who are the Cardinals going to trade for, and what in the world is going on in Milwaukee? All that and more on the National League Central Edition MLB.com Extras. Rick Horton this week, Cardinals broadcaster, who kind enough to take a little break from the beach or poolside, or I don't know if there's a little umbrella in any drink, or you guys are hanging in Miami and a little off day today.
Yeah, it's all good. I'm actually in a little alcove right now with a ceiling fan, and I'm looking out over the water here in Miami, so it's not so bad.
No, not so bad at all. In fact, for the Cardinals, really, it hasn't been so bad all year long. Rick, you've been around a lot of very good, world championship Cardinal teams. What is it about this team that strikes you as special or gives you any sense that there might be a real happy ending with this club?
Well, I think that the word team, we've been around this game a while, Dave, and, you think about the word team and it kind of means a lot of things to a lot of people. But, when a team is really functioning well, there's a real sense of connectedness. There's a real sense of kind of pulling together in the same way. And then when something, happens that has a little adversity to it, you don't kind of overreact. And somebody kind of fills in and does their role. And this team has been extraordinary at that. I mean, I've seen teams where, you get one guy hurt, and all of a sudden it's, hey, let's throw in the towel and start talking about next year. And, the Cardinals have had enough organizational depth, number one, but they also have enough team unity, number two, that they have overcome some things. They lose Matt Holliday, you lose that Adam Wainwright, and you think, well, that's not going to work. You lose Matt Adams, you lose your third and fourth hitter in the lineup, and yet you're not kind of too fazed by it. It's really been extraordinary.
Yeah, and I'm glad you make that point, because I've felt like for years that St. Louis is that organization that there are teams that are able to go out there and patch holes with a lot of money. The Yankees come to mind. But there are teams, very few of them, who develop just brilliantly and consistently year after year. They manage payroll really, really well. They have a consistency in the front office and, on the field and the manager seat, et cetera, really well, year in, year out. And that team, really more than any other, for me, just has to be the St. Louis Cardinals. And so I feel like this is sort of what they do, right? This kind of a year is kind of what this franchise is built to do so well. And yet, I do feel like they're doing it to a higher level this year than I've seen. Am I reading too much into it?
No, I think you're right about that. I mean, you'd say, yes, it's kind of consistent with the nature of the Cardinals organization. I would agree with you there. I was fortunate enough to be a Dodger for a while, and I felt like the Dodgers were very classy from top to bottom and had, good ownership. It was the O'Malley's at the time, and it's years ago. But, I mean, it's just kind of an understanding of how to develop players and how to do things right. And, the Cardinals certainly have always kind of been that way. And they have to be a little careful about kind of some organizational smugness. I mean, Cardinals didn't invent the game, but I mean, they're doing things very professionally. But I would say this year is even beyond kind of almost beyond belief with what's going on. Because you lose your third and your fourth place hitter in the lineup. And Holliday, who knows when he'll be back. But you also lose your number one starter in Adam Wainwright. And currently, Lance Lynn's on the DL, your number two guy. You lose your eighth inning guy in Jordan Walden. Then you think, okay, this can't be good. But yet, John Mozeliak had the forethought to sign a guy like Mark Reynolds and, kept Peter Borges around and John Jay and Randall Grichuk's come to the big leagues, in a trade that Mozeliak made. So you've got kind of this plan B that I think he had in mind. So the plan B is in force right now, and the plan B is working well. I will say that they're being tested right now, because I'm not sure the plan C is maybe that strong. So I don't think another injury would be a good idea for the Cardinals at this point. But it's been fun to watch it develop.
Yeah. And it is a fascinating story, and I think especially from a distance to see. I'm sure there are teams in the division who would argue that point. In fact, we joke with Tom Singer and the Pirates about how, boy, they have played so well and yet can't make up any ground on the St. Louis Cardinals. And I think the point is often made on the other side, which is, the Cardinals have played so well, and lately they have not been able to distance themselves from anybody in the division. Do they feel, you're working with a 6-game lead in St. Louis, but do they feel a little bit of that, though, that people kind of at their heels all the time?
Well, it's interesting. I think the players have gotten the sense, and it's part of the Cardinals, you're going to call it a secret to success, that they don't, Mike Matheny doesn't even look at the standings. Now he says he doesn't. I can't believe he doesn't wake up in the morning over a cup of coffee and kind of glance at them. I mean, honestly, but they get so focused on just kind of doing what's in front of them and not really worrying about kind of, things that might throw you off. Mike is very kind of against distractions, and he thinks sometimes it's a distraction to think, hey, we got a big lead, or hey, we're way back, or whatever. What's everybody else doing? Just worry about what you do. It becomes so cliche in this game, but yet I think that's how the Cardinals operate. They operate within this cliche, if I could say it that way. So I don't think the players are necessarily worried too much about what's going on in Chicago or Pittsburgh, and they kind of notice it, but they're just doing their thing. Now, I will say from a broadcaster's point of view, the Cardinals were on a great run recently, and you look up and the Cardinals are still only 6 or 7 games back, and then you realize, wait a minute, this Pirate team is in fuego too. And so I think the fans and the broadcasters, we know it, and we notice it, and it is kind of amazing that the Pirates have played so well and made this a great race, and it's going to be a great race from here on in. But I think the players are oblivious, maybe too strong a word, but they're so focused on what they do, they don't tend to worry about next week or next month.
Fair to say that it's difficult for you to do your job without looking at the standings and the numbers on occasion. I mean, that is a part of what you do.
Right.
Is there somebody who stands out this year as, you mentioned all the injuries and all the guys who have filled in and helped this thing maintain its momentum. But is there an individual or two in your mind that have, maybe risen a little above and beyond?
Yes, I would say the name is Randall Grichuk to me. There are players that kind of do their thing. Matt Carpenter's a steady player, and the pitching's really been really good. I mean, it really has. John Lackey and Michael Watkins done his thing, and Rosenthal at the end. But you'd almost kind of say, well, we'd expect them to be good. But I think the guy that, in my mind, has become the single most exciting Cardinal player is Randall Grichuk. And I'm quick to say I don't think he's the best player, but I think he's the most exciting player. Mike Matheny actually said yesterday when the team was in Philadelphia, he said to the question, why is Randall Grichuk hitting first? He said, I just love to watch him hit. I don't want him to hit as often as possible. So he's hitting in the first spot despite, he kind of has a tendency to strike out every once in a while. But he is just an exciting player. He has good speed. He has phenomenal power for a guy that's not a big guy. And I think he's just given this team some energy, offensively, defensively, on the base path. I think it's, kind of early to tell on some guys, like Jason Hayward starting to swing the bat a lot better, too. He's become fun to watch. But in my mind, the guy that maybe stands out as, okay, you thought he'd be A, and he's been A+, I think that guy is Randall Grichuk.
Boy, he has carried the mail a little bit on occasion here, especially recently. What about at the, once we get to the All-Star break and guys get a little time off and then you start that, that second half where things get real in a hurry, we'll immediately be on the trade deadline. And I wonder, a team like the Cardinals, what do you suppose they'll be looking to do?
Well, it's interesting. There was about maybe 3 weeks ago, maybe a month ago, there was a big hue and cry in the Cardinal fan base of, let's go get Cole Hamels tomorrow no matter what it costs. And, I think everybody thought, especially with Wainwright down, and, it's like, well, we need starting pitching. You never have enough of that. And, I think John Mozeliak, the general manager, was very kind of calm and saying, well, let's kind of wait and see what our need is in June and July, and let's not jump to kind of a deal that all of a sudden, we get Cole Hamels, but you got to give up Carlos Martinez to do that. Well, why would you do that? Martinez is pitching so well as a young 23-year-old guy with a big upside. Why would you kind of throw in the towel on him when you're pitching? Honestly, you're talking about getting a fifth starter. You're not, or not Hamilton's in the fifth starter, but you've already got four good starters. So you know, there are teams in the league that are looking for a second and third good starter. So don't panic about that. So I think the fan base has kind of come to the conclusion, especially after the holiday injury, that maybe you wait around till June and July and see what your need is at the time. I think the Cardinals have some wiggle room in terms of their salary structure to be able to go out and make a splash when it gets closer to that deadline. But I don't think they're in any kind of hurry to figure out what that is right now. I think the big, you know, the big start, the 22 games over 500 probably helps with that. But I think you wait and say, well, you know, do we need a left fielder? Do we need a first baseman? Where's our big hole? Do we need speed? Do we need defense? Do we need a guy in the bullpen? Let's wait and see how it plays out. So I really do think they're kind of in a holding pattern with that, but I do think they have the money to kind of fill that hole when the time comes.
Well, it's going to be interesting to watch. They are, you know, the best team in baseball and leading the most interesting division in baseball. And, Ricky, we appreciate you taking a little time, a little break away from the beach, the pool, and, you know, all the relaxation of an off day, man. Enjoy it. Enjoy the series in Miami. And maybe we'll get a chance to catch up again a little bit later on.
Be glad to do that. I'm headed back to the pool, but I enjoyed my time with you, Dave. It's all good.
Terry, the Cubs, 7 games over .500. They remain third place in the division. It's a funny and weird place, that National League Central. As well as teams play, they don't seem to be able to make up a whole lot of ground on the Cardinals. But this team is playing well, and they're, you know, all the nail biters and close games that they've played this year, they've had a couple of lappers recently. I almost wonder if they know what to do with that. You know, 17-0 at Cleveland, 8-0 in Minneapolis. Those must feel like weird days.
No, it just gives them more reason to celebrate. They Cubs have a tendency this year to have rather loud and rowdy parties immediately after a win, and with lights and weird, very loud music. And it's just every time if they win 1-0, if they win 17-0, it's time to party. And then they forget it, boom, and move on, and they're ready to go.
So 37 parties so far as somebody covering
yes.
the team. how much do you enjoy that partying, and how much is it becoming kind of annoying at this point?
Well, no, the party doesn't bother me because, you know, it's not. I feel bad for the clubhouse guys because they're the ones that have to clean up the mess. But it's just no, as long as the players are happy, and I think the point of emphasis from Joe Maddon, the reason he sort of encourages this is that it's really hard to win a major league game, and it's okay. It may have been 70-0, but it's still really hard to win. I mean, watching Arrieta on Sunday in the series finale against the Twins, it wasn't, he may have shut them out, but it was tough. He had to be right on top of his game. And so you take an 8-0 win and run with it and enjoy it. And I think that's what the guys have been doing.
Well, you know, much is said about Joe Maddon and his philosophies and style as a manager. And we talked to Lenny Casper about this a couple of weeks ago. And I'm curious, I mean, what do you make of it all? You know, obviously, he's quite the personality. He's a lot of fun to be around. And there's a method to his madness. I guess, I don't know, are you surprised that more teams don't adopt it? Or is it just something that can only really come naturally?
I think it can only come naturally. You can't force it. Knowing Robin Ventura as a person, I don't think Robin, the White Sox manager, could pull off something like this. It's just not his personality. Joe's a very unique individual. Might be the first manager I've seen who comes in there with, you know, he's got his backpack and his blue jeans and very relaxed, and he's not superstitious, but does have some routines that he sticks to. He's the only manager I know that's had usually has a glass of wine and some dark chocolate after a game, win or lose. So haven't quite figured out the combo there, but he's different, and he's able to relate to the players. And I think that's a good thing. So much of this game is mental, and you know, these players wouldn't be here if they didn't have the physical skills. Now it's a matter of fine-tuning the mental element of the game, and that's what's going to make the difference between winners and losers. And he's very big on that, and that's kind of the fun part.
Yeah. I gotta be honest. I mean, I just think it's a great challenge. As you mature, you get older, and whatever. If you've just been around for a while, you know, to maintain a voice that is relevant and heard and understood by the players. Each year, those players seem to get younger. And
yes, they do.
You know, whatever tactics you've used in the past, you know, some of them get exposed over time. I just find it remarkable the way he's able to continually reach these guys.
Yeah, this is my first year, so I'm seeing this for the first time. So I'm, you know, still adjusting. I guess what I like the fact that Joe is not just a baseball man. He's very involved with the community. He's got his a lot of charitable things that he wants to do. You know, every Friday he shows up at home with a different T-shirt supporting a different cause. It's not just baseball for him, even though baseball is a top priority. And I think that might also reflect on the rest of the team, too. You know, watching him in the clubhouse, he's very relaxed with the players, makes sure that he checks in with them. There was an incident in the Cubs Interleague Series against the Twins where Starlin Castro just had a total brain cramp. You know, he made an error, and then he compounded it with a mental gaffe by not throwing home, and another run scored. And Joe dealt with it by talking to Starlin one-on-one. I'm sure there was no yelling or screaming that was going on. He knows, and everyone knows, that Starlin was upset about the incident. And I think the best thing about it was that Starlin was accountable to his teammates and to Madden after it happened. And I think that's, again, that's, you know, what Joe said on day one was, I need to earn your respect. You have my respect, now I need to earn yours. And I think the players like the fact that he treats them like men. And maybe that's what it comes down to, bottom line.
Yeah, you know, and that story is an interesting one, too, because I feel like Starlin Castro, year in, year out, is the guy who gets villainized for making the occasional mistake. And I don't know if by his managers, by whomever, fans, whatever the case, I feel like he is more apt to take you know, the slings and arrows than a lot of guys. And when I read the headline that he had one of those mental mistakes, which occasionally happen with him, I was curious what the reaction would be, how Joe would handle it. And I guess it just goes back to speaking to what kind of a manager and person he is.
Yeah, and Starlin, again, after the game, Starlin was there to talk to the media, did not hide, which is commendable. You know, unfortunately, he'd had a really kind of tough May with a lot of errors, and his average was down, and we sort of thought he'd turn the corner a little bit here in June. So for him to make that mistake was just really kind of surprising. The other thing is, with the team doing so well, they can't afford to have those kind of mistakes. You know, they're glare. When the team was not winning and not doing well, okay, you pick on Starlin. Now with the team doing well, those type of things get magnified even more, and they just can't happen. And Starlin knows it. And Joe says that he's very patient and says that he's going to work with them, and we'll just have to wait and see if it happens again.
Yeah, interesting. Last week we talked a lot about the Kyle Schwarber experience that was on the way, and boy, I mean, he looks to me like he did pretty well. Everything went pretty well for him. Had some success there at the plate. Does that intensify the fans' desires to have him up there? How did he handle it, and the subsequent, you know, return to the minor leagues?
Well, of course, the fans want him there right now, you know, and behind the plate. And I hope the fans understand that Kyle is the first person that will tell you he needs more time in the minor leagues. And that's encouraging to me, because Kyle knows that he still has some work to do. And it was a perfect scenario. I'm not sure that you could do that with too many minor leaguers, but he handled it absolutely perfectly. I mean, he was called up. He took advantage of it. He was sitting next to David Ross or Miguel Montero in the dugout. He was asking questions. They had him catch some bullpen sessions, you know, before the game so that he could work with some of the big leaguers, get some more experience that way. It was just like a perfect six game situation for him. And then he got to hit, and I cannot believe that the guy, at first he was making it look pretty easy. You go 4 for 5 in your first start. I mean, come on. But then he did not expect to have his triple be his first major league hit, but that just shows you how quick he is on the bases. He wants to catch. Let's let him go to the minors and catch. He'll be with AAA Iowa starting on Tuesday. They have Monday off, and he'll be right down there at AAA. So not only does he get a little stint in the big leagues, but he gets a promotion, and now he's just one phone call away from the big leagues for a full-time basis. I'm almost sure we'll see him in September, and fans can watch him then. But it certainly was fun, and it was fun for him. I asked him if he got a goodie bag from the big leaguers, you know, to go home with, and he laughed at that, and said no. But I know the only minor glitch was that they were putting his equipment bag onto the truck that was headed back to Chicago, and they had to grab it and get it off so he could take it with him to Des Moines. But I think that's a I think if he could have had it happen, maybe he could have snuck on the bus a little bit.
You know? Yeah, I'm sure. Well, another real good positive week for this Cubs team that continues to have the attention of just about everybody. And boy, Kerry, I almost regret to tell you, you're going to be home a lot for these next couple of weeks. No more exciting travel and racking up miles and all that good stuff. You're just going to have to settle.
Well, my flight back to Chicago from Minneapolis was canceled because of the weather. So let's just say that the life of the sports writer is not all that glamorous when you have to spend several hours in the airport waiting for them to make a decision. But I love American Airlines, so I will continue to fly and hopefully get to Wrigley Field in time for the Dodgers before the series ends. Let's hope.
All right. Well, we all hope that, Kerry. Thanks, yeah. As always. We look forward to it next week.
All right. Thanks, Dave.
Tom, well, here we are. And for the first time in what seems like forever, I know it's not the truth, but for the first time in quite a little while, we see the Pirates having run into a little bit of trouble. In particular, the Washington Nationals, who we know to have good pitching, but the Pirates got a little taste of their own medicine this last weekend, huh?
Well, they did. A pretty convincing sweep, until Corey Hart hit a two-run homer in the last inning of the series. The Pirates had been outscored 19-1 and basically 19 unanswered runs. They got one in the second inning of the first game, then went quiet with the bat, ultimately quiet against Max Scherzer in his no-hitter, and basically didn't score again until the last inning when it really didn't matter. It was 9-0 in that game by that point. So we basically saw, for lack of a better term, you know, the law of averages caught up to them on both sides of the ball, hitting and pitching. Their hitting went more quiet than it has been, because they did all that winning on the strength of good pitching. They really haven't hit consistently for a couple of weeks now, which was kind of overlooked by their own outstanding pitching. And that pitching also kind of flattened out in Washington.
Yeah.
But, it's one of those big bumps on the road. You get them occasionally. Everybody's kind of waving it off for one reason. Under Hurdle, this team's had a remarkable track record of always having one of these weekends every season when it seems like everything's going down the drain, and they have a pretty good track record of bouncing back from these.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned it, because, you know, people could look at Clint Hurdle and maybe something he did this last weekend in two different ways, and I know how people generally react, but I really liked his reaction to Scherzer's no-hitter. And near-perfect game, by the way. But he got Scherzer to sign the lineup card. Now, that's, you know, back in the day when maybe teams and personnel didn't fraternize quite as much, that would have really never happened, maybe been frowned upon. And I could see some people taking issue with it. I love it. To me, it just says, it's one game. We're cool. No problem. Yeah, we got no hit by Max Scherzer. We won't be the only ones. And I got his autograph, and we move on. It's sort of that water off a duck's back mentality. And I think, I don't know if it's intentional or not. I tend to think it's not, because I just, you know, knowing Clint the way I do, I mean, he's just cool. I mean, he kind of takes things in stride. And I think it sends a really good message, whether intended or not, to his troops.
Well, it does. And, you know, actually the day before, you know, right after the no-hitter, he said something that was really remarkably touching. You know, everybody, all the players were kind of despondent about being no-hit. It's not a thrill for them. But Clint said, you know, you have to find it in your heart as a baseball fan to appreciate your performance. And he said that like 5 minutes after it ended. So he could definitely step back and just appreciate the mastery that he saw and, you know, move on.
Yeah, I think it's good. I really do. I just think for the young players and for the veterans, it says nothing hurt. Big deal. Of course, easy to do, too, when they're coming off, a winning streak of about 8 in a row and lost the opener.
Well, not only that, but even including the Washington sweep, after that ended, they had still won 21 of the last 28. So, I mean, that's a pretty good extended run, even including those three losses.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. And, you know, part of it now, as they return from Washington, boy, the Pirates' schedule into basically the All-Star break is very heavily home-based. I mean, my goodness, I think that all but for maybe three games in Detroit, they're at home there at friendly PNC.
And they have won 14 of the last 16 at home. So, you know, when you want to get well, there's nothing like the PNC Park Hospital to do it.
Yeah, and I love the fact that at the end of that run will be four games with St. Louis, who they continue to chase. And that looks like it's going to be a great race down to the wire. If you're the Pirates and you're in that clubhouse, I mean, how much talk, how much attention is there to St. Louis versus just continuing to play good baseball and, you know, talk of wild card and the concept of the wild card, because the wild card hasn't treated them particularly well in recent years.
No, all the emphasis definitely is on how they're playing. There's no acknowledgement really at all of what the Cardinals are doing, except at one point, you know, when Hurdle was asked about, is it frustrating to be playing so well and not gaining any ground on St. Louis, he kind of turned around and said, you know, Mike Matheny, you know, the Cardinal manager, is probably being asked, is it frustrating for them to be playing so well and not gaining any ground? So, but other than that comment, you know, this is strictly a keep our focus on our game mentality, playing in one game at a time. You know, once again, until this Washington glitch, you know, they had gotten closer to the Cardinals than they had been since April. They were within four games when this series began. So now it's back up. You know, the deficit went back to six games. But not only are they not talking about it, I'm honestly convinced that they don't even look at the standings and they don't really know how far behind the Cardinals they are. I'm talking about mainly the players. They definitely have tunnel vision for playing their own game, and they're not concerned about what, you know, other teams are doing.
That says a lot about where this franchise has come in the last three or four years, doesn't it? I mean, you think about those previous couple of decades and you know, the fact that this team now just goes about its business and knows it's a contending team, knows that it has the weaponry and everything else. It has the experience of getting to the postseason the last couple of years. It really is just a phenomenal turnaround that they've gone under.
Well, it really is, and once again, some fans kind of, and it was a lousy series against the Nationals. There's no sugarcoating it, but what do you think a more accurate read on this team, the way they've played for 3 weeks prior to this weekend or just this weekend? I mean, what gives you a better read on the team? Obviously, it's the longer run. Some people will point out that most of those wins came against teams with a losing record. But, you know, the Nationals actually were doing worse when they came into the series against the Pirates than a lot of the teams that they had played. I believe they had the poorest record in the National League for the preceding 3 weeks. The poorest record, with the exception of the Philadelphia Phillies. So they were due to get well. Things balance out in the course of a long season, and like you said, that day-to-day mentality that Hurdle inspires really served the Pirates well, and I look for them to bounce back real strong.
So if indeed things do balance out over the course of the long haul, and we've seen over the years that they do, do you suspect then that this team will be an offensive juggernaut in the second half?
I really do. Once again, they had only scored 33 runs in the 13 games before getting to Washington, yet won 11 of them because of that pitching. So the hitting really hasn't gelled at all. Now we're getting into the hot summer days. Hot weather typically is hitting weather. We've still seen individuals get hot in spurts, but the whole lineup hasn't clicked as a unit. And I really think that's coming. And if that pitching regression that could be expected as hard as they've been for weeks takes place, I think the hitters will take the load off to your pitchers. Neil Walker being a prime example of somebody who, when he gets hot, he's tough to retire. He's a real streak hitter. I think he's got a streak coming up. Josh Harrison has been steady. Kutch has gone hot and cold. He's kind of cold again now, but he's going to warm up. Mercer, this was his time last season. Jordan Mercer will get hot. And then, you got the X Factor, Jung Ho Gong, who has kind of established himself as the everyday cleanup hitter, and he's doing a good job. Starling Marte has been phenomenal as the number two hitter. And you got Gregor Polanco, whose swing is in the best place that we've seen. He's been up in the majors for about a year now. We just passed his first anniversary. And, of course, I didn't even mention Francisco Cervelli, the best-hitting catcher in the majors. So once all these guys start hitting at the same time, rather than having to win games 3-2 or 2-0, we're going to see some 8-6 games, with the Pirates winning them.
Well, you could see it happening. You could certainly see it happening. In the meantime, Tom, welcome home. I mean, and enjoy it. You're gonna be at home in your own bed quite a bit here for these next couple of weeks. Hope you enjoy that, and we look forward to talking to you again next week. Adam, I just kind of want to go right into this. You and I are speaking on a Monday afternoon, and the news came out earlier today. A former Brewers outfielder and a former colleague of mine, and I know a colleague of yours, Darrell Hamilton, very tragic news in Houston, passed away, apparently the victim of some domestic violence in his own home. What can you tell us about the situation?
Well, yeah, the report today that he was murdered as part of a murder-suicide, and it's devastating news. I mean, literally, and you're probably feeling the same way, Dave, you're numb. The best way to put it is it's beyond my comprehension that anyone could harm Darrell Hamilton. He was one of the brightest personalities that I ever came across in this game, and I was lucky to get to know him during the 2014 season. He picked up radio broadcasts for the Brewers, 29 of them, when Bob Uecker took some time off for the first time. And he was such a big, bright part of the traveling party, and the smile is what you remember, how much he loved baseball, how much he loved being at the ballpark, how much he loved people. The best way I can think of him is his personality was reflected in the way he dressed. It was all these bright colors. It was all these crazy patterns, contrasting patterns, and it was always impeccably ironed and put together. And that's who he was. He was this big, bright ball of energy. And it's devastating for those of us who knew him and liked him to think about the fact that he's gone.
Yeah, well, I don't know that I could I could do any better than that. Very, very well said. And I think, like you point out, you know, it's the smile. I mean, it was just he was always happy. He was always having fun. He was, and not in a goofy way. I mean, he was just,
no.
He was just a very upbeat, positive guy, and so involved on so many different levels. He was a great player and a broadcaster, and oh man, I just can't imagine. Especially
worked in the commissioner's office for a while. You know, that was an important part of his career. And it's been interesting talking to those who knew him today. I called Jeff Cirillo, the former Brewer, who was a young player. Hamilton was already somewhat established. He says what he remembers is that Cirillo showed up in Milwaukee and he didn't have a car. Darrell Hamilton knew he needed a car, so he gave him his car, a car that Bud Selig had loaned from his dealership, and Hamilton figured it out and gave the kid his car so he didn't have to worry about that. And Cirillo said they've done fantasy camps for the last couple of years together, and it's, you know, Cirillo obviously went on to a great career himself, an all-star, did a lot of things in the game. But they get back to fantasy camp, and Cirillo says it was still the same way. It was still the veteran hazing the rookie. And Cirillo had to wear it for a couple of days down in Phoenix. And, you know, stuff like that is what it's who Darrell Hamilton was. One more, if I could share, Jim Duquette, the former he was the assistant GM of the Mets when they traded for Darrell Hamilton. And he was the man who had to release Darrell Hamilton, and he had a falling out with Bobby Valentine. And it was a tough situation, obviously. It was the end of Darrell Hamilton's playing career. And Jim Duquette told me that whenever he would see him subsequently, instead of it being an odd, awkward situation, Hamilton would throw an arm around him and yell out to anyone who could listen that this is the man who released me, you know, from baseball. And they would have a good laugh about it. He never held it against Jim Duquette. And it's little things like that. You know, I wasn't there for either of those situations, but it's exactly how I remember Darrell Hamilton, too. Just that smile, as you said, that laugh. Just a guy who really loved being around this game.
Yeah, tragic story, and I'm sure more details will be forthcoming. But, boy, the passing of Darrell Hamilton, one, is just kind of hitting us all in the gut on this Monday. And for you and the Milwaukee Brewers, Adam, it's not as if they need additional disappointment and frustrations. I was going to joke with you before the podcast about how, you know, it's just our weekly visit where you assure us all that everything is okay, even though quite clearly things are not with the Milwaukee Brewers. They managed one win since we last spoke. And, gosh, you know, we're getting to that point now, Adam, where I just wonder, we talked a lot about normalizing and just kind of getting back to playing decent baseball. But at this point now, it's got a little bit of that train wreck feel, right? It's just sort of how bad can or how bad will this thing get? I don't know anymore what we're watching for.
Well, and here's the problem, because you're right. This season is toast. The problem for them is where do they go from here? And the reason that I think normalizing and getting better is important is that you'd like to take some of these pieces and do something with them and get some young players back for the future. That is a significant challenge right now for Doug Melvin, because the guys that the players that the Brewers have who are tradable are almost to a man struggling. You know, you're talking about Matt Garza with the highest ERA of his career. Kyle Loesch, the highest ERA in baseball among qualifying pitchers. Aramis Ramirez, quiet, not providing an impact bat. These are guys who they would, if they could, I think, you know, deal and try to get back a prospect or two. If you go bigger than that, you look at Carlos Gomez. If they're going to make a big impact trade this trade season, Carlos Gomez is the most likely candidate. He's signed through this year and next. Dynamic player, you know, from a contending team's perspective, if they want power, if they want speed, if they want a leadoff guy, if they want premium defense, Gomez gives you all of that. But he's been sidelined by this hip issue, and they tried to give him some days, knock it out. Well, it didn't get knocked out, so they gave him some more days this past week. They're hoping to get him back in the lineup here in the coming days. So there is significant issues for this team right now, both in terms of losing every day and just the immediate record, but also, I think, more importantly, for the long term, because it's their long-term planning right now is challenging, to say the least.
Yeah, challenging would be a real good word for it. We saw Ron Ranicki let go earlier this year. Melvin has managed to hold on for the time being, but this just really, I mean, you get to the point where I just feel like he's in a situation now where he almost can't win.
And he is, he's an interesting situation. In the final year of his contract, there's been lots of questions here in Milwaukee about what is Doug's future. He's been doing this a long time. You know, he brought this franchise up from the depths. When Doug Melvin took over, this team was in the final weeks of a 106-loss season in which things looked incredibly dire. This big new ballpark and a big, huge mess on the field. And he brought them back to the point where they were a contending club every year when they went to spring training. So this is now the first time in a long time where this Brewers team has been kind of staring at a rebuild. And there's lots of questions about the future for Doug Melvin, and they haven't really been answered, at least publicly. I think there probably is more of an internal plan for what's happening there and a transition to the next, the next general manager of this team, perhaps. I would venture to guess that that's been at least discussed and probably is somewhat down the road. But it's an awkward time to start, talking about those types of things. Because it's just the immediacy of the problems on the field are sort of paramount right now. And if Doug Melvin is going to have a role in the organization going forward, which is everyone sort of expects is going to be the case, it's a tough time to kind of talk about that right now. So I think they're kind of backburnering those issues and dealing with the immediate issues first. So that was the draft. They're through the draft. And now here we go to the next big project is the trade deadline on July 31. And I think there's a lot of focus right now on how they're going to get through that and try to maximize what they do have and try to get, again, it's all about getting better for the future and avoiding this type of thing again.
Yeah, well, they need Matt Garza and Kyle Loesch and some of those veterans to really step something up here and, man, give them something to deal. It is like the worst of all scenarios right now for the Milwaukee Brewers. Well, Adam, another upbeat and cheerful conversation about Milwaukee. I swear, next week we got to have something. We got to have something fun to talk about.
I'll do my best, Dave.
And Mark, look, the Reds now, still under 500, but not terribly so. Only four games under at the moment. Tough playing in that National League Central Division. Things never quite look very good with the way St. Louis has been running away with things. But, Cincinnati played a little bit better baseball lately. Certainly, the month of June is not really looking too bad.
No, it seems to be looking up. It's been, of course, a very odd season, very disappointing in a lot of ways. But somehow they're still 5.5 games back for the wild card. Like you said, four games under 500. They're playing well again in this last stretch. It seemed like after the 9-game losing streak and they had the team meeting, things kind of perked up, and then Price kind of had that tirade on the bench when Tony Cingrani gave up the grand slam and kind of phoned it in on the next batter, and he sensed the team was kind of sleepwalking. He fired him up a little bit on the bench, and I think since those two instances, it seems like there's been some improvement on the field overall.
The other thing, though, you can see a little bit of a trend here, and I guess I bring it up because as I look at the schedule, this team's going to be on the road a little bit. Starting tomorrow on Tuesday, at Pittsburgh, at New York, then a little homestand, and then, Washington and Miami for another long trip leading into the All-Star break. So it's a lot of road games heading into the break, and that maybe as much as anything has been an Achilles heel for this team. I mean, they've played well at home, but the road has not been kind.
No, you're absolutely right. It's been pretty bad on the road. In fact, I think home games, they're 20-14, which is a solid performance at home. But on the road, they're like 12-22, which is just not acceptable, especially if you're trying to say you're a contender, and that's hard to do if you're that poor on the road. It seems like when you and I talk, we'll have a week where we talk after the Reds play today, so we'll stretch of a homestand where they won three or four in a row, and then we talk and say this is a big week because they're going on the road, and then they go on the road and they stink, and then we talk after that about well, it's because they have them back home because they're going to win again. So it's kind of followed that trend throughout the season. And now they're going to Pittsburgh, which is a Central Division foe and a wild card foe. It's big for them to have a nice series. Pittsburgh's kind of struggling a little bit after what happened with Washington, and then they get the Mets. And so, again, a chance for the Reds to get back above 500 perhaps, or at least get to 500, and then they can see where they have from there. Of course, the trade deadline's always looming large, and their performance could directly relate to how they perform at the trade deadline.
Yeah, I think of the Milwaukee Brewers and their general manager, Doug Melvin. He has what would seem a pretty clear and cut-and-dry path going forward with the way they have struggled. Trade deadline is an opportunity for that team. I watch this Reds team, and I think it's just not – this is not clear. But to your point, I mean, it would be a double shot in the arm if they were to play well from this point to the All-Star break, because you'd be doing it on the road, which I think would be a double lift for them. Get them over 500 perhaps around the break. They're still very much in the wild card conversation. So it would just make for a much more difficult decision to make toward the end of July, I would think, at Cincinnati.
It is, and then there's the X factor, maybe if that's the right word, of the ownership. Bob Castellini has shown a tremendous amount of loyalty to, and maybe an attachment perhaps to a lot of his players, and he's been resistant in the past to, especially last season, to part with anybody that he likes on the field and that the fans have grown to love. Aroldis Chapman chiefly comes to mind, Johnny Cueto, of course. And in the past years, Brandon Phillips, he signed him to a long-term contract that may have been counterintuitive. So there's that in play. He doesn't like to give up. He doesn't want to signal that the team's out of it ever. He's a bit, very much a competitive person. And I think if the team has a chance to win, it really does put them in a bind, because if they have a chance to get to the wild card, he's going to want to go for that. And it may not be good for the future as far as trying to get prospects to trade some of their guys like Leak and Cueto and Chapman and maybe Marlon Byrd and some other guys. But if they have a chance to go for it, I think they might hang on to those guys and try to see how far they can get. So it's definitely a quandary. It's not a clear-cut situation, but they're definitely got some things to think about in the next 3 or 4 weeks.
Well, I'll tell you what is clear-cut, and that is that Todd Frazier is – really good. I think maybe it's because the team, hasn't played as well. I just feel like, I don't know, in some ways maybe he's underrated, underappreciated.
It would seem that way, at least in the All-Star balloting. He hasn't been, until last week, really featured much in terms of promotion as far as why should he be challenging for the lead of the All-Star balloting. Matt Carpenter's got a pretty comfortable lead right now. Frazier is trying to get there. He's having, for the Reds at least, a very historical season. He's on pace for over 50 homers, 100 and, well over 100 RBIs, and he could be the first person in Reds history to have a season of 40 doubles and 40 homers, which would be remarkable considering some of the hitters they've had over the span of that team. So it's interesting that he hasn't been more popular. He's a very engaging guy, but I think he's definitely coming into his own as a hitter and as a fielder. Last couple of years, he really has developed into a solid, solid third baseman.
Yeah, no doubt. The numbers are borderline stunning this year for him. I certainly hope that he gets recognized and appreciated for that when we get there. And he no doubt will, especially being at home. That'll be a pretty big deal as well. And meanwhile, other on-the-field stories for this team. You have a guy like Zach Cozart go down, and that's not good. And no one's excited about that or happy about that. But at the same time, when you see a move you made in the offseason and a guy like Eugenio Suarez step in and really, really handle it pretty well. I mean, he's acquitted himself nicely in Cozart's spot here lately. That's a positive. That's a huge lift, I would think, for a team that, at times, I feel like they're searching for a positive, searching for a reason to keep their heads up and stay, stay positive. And that's one that I think could certainly provide that.
Yeah, this is kind of the reason why they acquired Suarez. Number one was to push Suarez, push Cozart a little bit in spring training after he had a really bad year last year. But you know, Cozart was the incumbent. But the other thing was kind of a fail-safe. They didn't have a real true shortstop in their system at the time that could step in if anything was to ever happen to Cozart. And, of course, they hoped nothing ever would happen. Fortunately for them, it did. But, you know, after a pretty slow start at the plate in his first couple of games, he had a really nice weekend against the Marlins, and he's played pretty well in the field so far. He kind of has this this background. He did the same thing in Detroit last season. He came in, replaced the player with an injury, and acquitted himself pretty nicely. So this is what they're getting from him now, and it's a lift indeed. Of course, they need lifts from their main players to make any hay in the contending. But right now, having Suarez play steady shortstop is definitely a boost. And they also have guys like Christopher Negron that can play there, so they have some coverage now, and they just need these guys to step up. They have to really use their depth.
Well, and I guess just you know some clarity, some finality to the Devin Mesoraco story. Though it's not what anybody was hoping for, you know, sometimes just. You know, just closure on a situation for the season can be good. And I know he's having hip surgery, and they expect him to be back and ready to go at spring training.
That's what they expect. It's going to be very interesting to see how this pans out. He's having the surgery on Monday, June 29th. He's going to travel with the team to Pittsburgh and then New York and then have the surgery in New York with a hip specialist. One of the things he pointed out and has pointed out throughout, and as Brian Price has also mentioned, is that they want to do everything they could and exhaust every option before giving in and having the surgery if it was all possible. They wanted to explore every treatment, every rehab, and they did do that. The one question I always had throughout is the longer they delay the surgery, are they putting next season into peril in any way? And that's going to be really telling how this goes on forward. If they're expecting a smooth surgery and rehab and he's able to catch from the get-go at spring training 2016, then it's all worked out. But you definitely want to watch that this February and see where he is, because you'd hate to have a situation where he's going to extended spring training when the team breaks camp and he's not ready to start in April. So hopefully this is done in time and he's got plenty of time to get himself ready for next season.
Yeah, well, no doubt. And you're not the only one hoping for that one. I think a lot of folks are locally going to be saying the same thing. Well, Mark, as always, fun to chat, talk a little baseball, and get the update on the Cincinnati Reds. We'll look forward to doing it again next week, probably to the road somewhere.
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Again, a busy, busy week in the Central. This has been MLB.com Extras, the National League Central Edition.